Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 24, delivered on December 3, 2015. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Today, review for the final exam. The final exam structure is identical to the exam 1 and exam 2 in class. It will, in fact, be 7 questions. You choose 5 of the 7 questions. I said 6 earlier. I've decided 5 can cover what I need. Now, the first thing that you will want to do is look at the questions that were indicated, the 20 questions for exam 1 and the 20 questions for exam 2, because those are all, again, fair game. I usually pull about 3 of the 6 questions from the 2 exams. In other words, an exam question you would have seen before will be on the final, especially if it's a core objective. And that's where I get to the second part of this, which is in that syllabus that very few people ever read, is a great guideline to what else can be on the exam. Now, in that, there is a place in the syllabus called the course competencies. That's a fancy word for saying, what are my goals for you in the course? And if you look through those, aside from other matters, you should be able to demonstrate an understanding of financial market structure. In other words, that would include questions from exam one material, like, if I want to acquire, I'm a company and I'm trying to acquire funds for something that is short term, what market would I use? What market would I access as a company? Do you know? I see you trying to reach back into the dark past of this course. Let me see if I can get a hint. Do you have a wallet on you? Let me. What do you have in it?
Money.
Oh, money. Wait, let me see.
I think I have money at least.
Wait, what's that ring shape on you? there. Money. It's a money market.
Oh, okay.
Money market. Bro. Money market, that's the short term. Now, as opposed to if you're trying to draw money, funds, for a long-term project, what would be the market that you would access for that? You remember that one? As opposed to the money market, there is the?
Debt equity?
Capital market, yeah. The money market is the short market. The capital market is the long market. Now, in the short market, you would have the simplest one in the short market is companies accumulate bills that they have to pay. That's short borrowing from whomever you owe. So your day-to-day bills are a vast market. We don't think of it that way, but it really is. There are other instruments of the short market, too. For example, working capital. Remember I talked about those kinds of arrangements a bank will make with a small business. I can draw down money during the lean months so that I can build my inventory, and then I pay off the debt during the fat months and all that, working capital. And then there are the specialized markets that are actually quite large. Do you remember the one for large credit-worthy companies to borrow money for 30 days at low interest rates because they're very safe, big, huge corporations? Do you remember that what that debt instrument was called? What was it? No, those are long. It was called the commercial paper. commercial paper. Remember those kinds of markets that exist out there, like for those. That's one way you can look at market structure, is between the long and the short. Now, in the long market, you have, of course, the separation of debt and equity. Each of those, in and of itself, has its complexity. In the equity market, of course, you could say, well, there's preferred and common. But also, you could refer to the internally and externally generated. Make sure you remember that, because that's a good place, that's a big objective of the course, is for you to understand these different ways that you can look at the capital markets. In the debt market on the long term, you could separate it out a lot of ways. Senior versus junior debt, notes versus bonds. Then there are secured long-term debt instruments versus unsecured. The secured ones are called, do you remember that? Back in your deep, dark past, do you remember the secured market, what secured debt is called? You aced my last test. You're a genius. Talk to me.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't quite remember it. Can you give me a hint?
Yes, I can. Someday, you are going to be 35 years old. You're going to be slightly paunchy, but somehow some woman loved you and married you. And you are deciding you're going to have a family. So you want to buy a house, but you don't have the money to buy a house for a McMansion for $250,000. So you are going to have to take out a
loan.
What kind of a loan?
Mortgage.
So in the corporate world, we call those mortgage bonds. Right? Yes. Now, what is an unsecured debt, long debt called? Do you remember that one? What's an unsecured debt called? Hello? Hello? Yeah, here. What's an unsecured? Do you know? Yeah. Okay, back in the old days, there were these snack cakes. They're still around. Hostess snack cakes. Particularly, I loved Hostess Ding Dongs. But that was just me, and they institutionalized me for a while because I kept saying that. Okay? But there was another company that made snack cakes, too. What was the other company? Do you remember it?
Debbie.
Little Debbie. Okay, now, she grew up, so she's not little anymore. And you don't call an adult woman Debbie. You call her?
Deb.
Debentures. Excellent. God, it's like going to a ski behind a rowboat. Yes. Yes. Debentures. You remember them? Yeah. Mortgage bonds versus debentures. Debentures are the unsecured debts. Like I said, we're kind of twisting and turning the capital markets in different directions. And I could ask you to show me that you understand at least some of this. I mean, that could be a long essay question if you had to break the whole thing down. Now, there was one... There was another way that we could look at capital markets, especially for... Remember that bonds and stock are bought and sold in those kinds of financial markets. Sometimes they're called stock markets, although remember that the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. But there are two different markets there, really, for debt or equity. There's the market where the companies actually are selling the instruments, bonds or stock, to raise money. But then there's the other side of the market where the companies aren't really involved. It's just investors trading back and forth with each other. Do you remember the names of the two markets? What's the one called where the companies are actually raising the funds by selling the original instruments themselves?
Primary,
yes. And the other one is called the? Excellent, very good. Now, the primary market is the one we go to next. And I want you to understand, show me, I can't guarantee it, but it could be very likely that I'll have something where you understand the regulatory environment. The primary markets for securities are governed by one law, and the secondary markets are governed more or less by another law. They were passed in consecutive years, 1933 and 1934. The primary market, where you sell original debt and equity instruments, do you remember that's the Securities Act of 1933? That one would be a little, remember that one. And the Securities Exchange Act governs the secondary markets. That's the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, as amended. It's kind of scary that after all these years, we really haven't done a lot to tighten those markets other than these show-off things like Sarbanes-Oxley. There have been amendments, but really nothing to really face the 21st century at all, much less the last part of the 20th century. But anyway, those are, so now, in the primary market, what is the selling document for, let's say, a stock? Your company wants to sell its stock. If it fully registers that stock on, like, Form S-1, what is the selling document called? Do you remember? Prospectus. That's the prospectus. Remember, it's part of the much larger Form S-1 or Form SB-1. But the prospectus is a selling document. Now, before the company actually can use that selling document, it can show it around. Do you remember what it's called if it's the show document that can't actually be used until the quiet period is over and the registration goes live? Okay, what's the color of that heart on your chest? Okay, a red. Now, what does a penguin eat? A salmon? No, salmon are huge. Yeah, red herring. That's right. Very good. I'll find it one way or the other. See, you know these things. You just don't know that you know these things. Okay. Now, there's another one, too. There is something that kind of looks like a selling document, but it is not. As a matter of fact, it says, this is neither an offer to sell nor a solicitation for an offer to purchase the securities noted herein. It's posted in papers like the Wall Street Journal, and it looks for all the world like it's buy this, but it's not, because it is the only selling document is the prospectus itself. But this document is one part of the offering, in the sense of it shows what's going on. Do you know what that document is called? Okay, there's a story from the Old West. One quiet day at this saloon, all these geezers and all these ruffians and all that are sitting around drinking, and all of a sudden the wind whips up outside and starts to wave the swinging doors. And then you hear that music. And then a dog blasts through, walking with a limp. And he says, I'm looking for the man that shot my paw. The hell with you. I mean, I can't even get a good act. Okay, no. Where would the gunfight occur? What town? Tombstone, for God's sake. The tombstone is, what's that? This is way too much like work today, folks. I'm here all night. Which reminds me, I'm going to have office hours on Monday from noon until about 2 o'clock. If you have anything you want to ask me about. During finals week, my office hours will be from noon to 1 o'clock. I'll send an announcement out if I remember to about it. But, okay, now, a full-blown registration would be on a Form S-1 or an SB-1 or an SB-2. However, companies can actually sell stock without the benefit of a registration under certain exemptions. There are a variety of them, but can you think of one of those exemptions? Let me give you a hint. You ever hear of a musician, he's passed on now, named Bob Marley? Sure. What kind of music was he famous for? Exactly, reggae, Regulation A, reggae offerings. Okay? See, you knew it. Now, there's another regulation, too, that could play out. Do you remember the other? There's a series of three of them within one regulation. Do any of you remember what those were? One of them actually creates, it's a $1 million offering, and it creates freely tradable stock. But you got to be awfully careful with that one. But there's three of them. Two of them are for sophisticated, experienced investors. You can sell to them without benefit of registration. But it, remember, it is restricted stock. Do you remember what those, what regulation that is? Reg A was sort of like a higher one. But these were all called the Reg Ds. There was the Reg D 504, 505, and 506. The Reg D 504 creates freely tradable stock. But still, you have to go through state registration thing, loop jumps, and uniform form U1. I guess that's what they still use. But anyway, just make sure that you have some sense. Now, after you, and there's actually a way that a company that has issued stock that is restricted can register that stock with the SEC. Do you remember the form that a company would file to register stock that was already out there? And it sold it to sophisticated investors. And but they say, well, we'd like to have this freely tradable now. So there's a way that you can act, a company can actually register that stock. What's the form? What is it? Yeah, as a matter of fact.
That they, like, had stock.
Yeah, and you just file, you don't just, it's a hellacious form. It's literally like a Form S-1 in a lot of ways, and it makes you go live as a public company. It's Form 10. Now, either way, whether you go IPO selling new stock or you register formerly restricted stock, once you have done your registration statement, you are then in the program, subject to the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, and you have to file your 10-Ks and your 10-Qs, your Ks and Qs, and, of course, 8-Ks if there's some kind of unusual event. I'm telling you these things because you might have to answer a question on those. Show me some depth of knowledge about how these securities markets work, the actual markets. Moving away from that, getting on to other happier subjects here. Just a sort of a random selection. I could, one of those things that is a capstone of a first course in finance is the capital asset pricing model. Now, remember, I don't want you to write an equation. An equation is not an answer, especially to an essay question. An equation is sort of like a graph. It really doesn't say anything. Especially if you have to get on your feet and explain something. What I could ask you is, what would be a use of the capital asset pricing model in a real-world finance situation? What would be a use of the capital asset pricing model? And I've shown you a couple of different ways that it can be used. They all pivot around what it is you're calculating and what that thing you calculate can be used for. Okay? So that's a, that, I can't guarantee any specific question, but that's a very high goal of this course, is for you to understand that. Legal, regulatory, technical, ethical issues. I'm not going to ask you about ethics. I don't ask about ethics on exams. I never would on you. Now, as far as other matters go, of course, net present value, internal rate of return. Show me that you understand them. Show me that you have. You should be able to show me that you understand the relationship between them. Now, risk and return. One of the other big things of this course is risk and return. Moose, I need you to tell me. Yeah, Moose. Moose, I need you to tell me, what's the relationship between risk and return? Watch it. Be careful about how you answer. What is the relationship? One sentence. He's locked up. He's frozen. Help him. Okay. That was a third of the points. That was two-thirds of the points. No. Risk doesn't mean much to us. Well, risk, of course, does. I mean, you know, but there's only one kind of risk that matters in finance. Good. Or you could say non-diversifiable risk. So the full-blown, make my heart warm and my pants damp answer is the greater the systematic risk, the greater the expected return. Don't miss those two beats. Don't say, well, I took a big risk for you. I don't actually care how much risk you took for me or how much risk you took in a project. How much could you have gotten rid of? The only thing that you should expect a reward for is a risk that cannot be taken away. That systematic risk, that underlying risk of the economy, of the globe, of the world markets. The rest of the risk is all your fault because you could have done one thing to remove that risk in your investments. What could you have done to get rid of that risk in your investments? Diversified the portfolio. Exactly. Diversified the portfolio. Buying one stock, two stocks, well, you deserve every bit of that spanking you're going to get by the markets. And don't buy that thing, well, I made a ton of money by investing in one stock. Good for you. I will show you thousands, tens of thousands, hell, hundreds of thousands of investors who've gotten their butts beaten and gotten their asses bathed by doing that. So there's that bias you hear about the winner. I won in the lottery. Yeah, well, a million people didn't this week. They're not going to do anything but be stupid and go back and buy at the lottery trough again next week. ratio analysis. Look, we can all pull ratios out. By the way, you're allowed two cards for the final. Two. Okay. Ratio, I know, right? That tells you how useless they'll be. But ratios, we can all pull out a ratios book and look up a ratio. It might not hurt for you to have some of the key ratios written down. But don't show me a formula for an answer. But I could ask you a question about a ratio. Show me that you have a deep ability to understand what the math means. Math means nothing unless you can translate it into the materiality of our day-to-day productive lives. Here's the thing. I could say ask you something like, okay, the gross margin of a company has been declining for the past 5 years. What would be the likely cause of this decline? That would mean that you would have to understand gross margin is sales divided by gross income. Now, gross income is your sales minus your cost of goods sold. Okay? So, and this would be a little tough on your feet, but that's why you're at the upper class level now, is to think critically on your feet. Okay, gross margin, in other words, your gross income divided by your sales, has been declining for the past 5 years. Now, you look at the formula and say, well, the only thing between sales and gross profit is your cost of goods sold. Now, what's a simpler word that's pretty much the same as cost of goods sold? Do you know a simpler word? No? It's your wholesale prices, for God's sake. You have what you sold minus what you bought it for. You have your retail revenue minus your wholesale cost, and there's your gross profit. Okay, so that should be a key. What would you say is going on if gross profit is going down, gross margin rather, is declining over a period of 5 years? What's going on with the company? Say it.
Price of raw materials are increasing.
Against, and the company cannot reflect those price increases in their final product. In other words, the market is tightening. They're facing competition. Something is keeping them from being able to jack up their prices to reflect rising wholesale costs. This company is in a bind. Over a period of 5 years, you see that keep going. That's something that tells me they're on their fat asses and they're not looking around for cheaper wholesalers. Or they're not distinguishing their products so those competitors aren't pinning them down on price. You see? Now, for a while, you can actually have a company. You can see a company's net gross margin sliding. Especially if a company has been buying cheapo special wholesale and suddenly the company realizes it has gotten a reputation for cheap crap. It might, for a few years, perhaps even longer, start buying more pricier wholesale components with the purpose of a long-term strategy of being able to build reputation, brand, and then be able to charge higher prices. This was what happened with some Japanese companies. In the 1950s, Japanese stuff in the United States was considered just total crap. It was just awful. And we always made the joke, yeah, that's here, made in Japan, yeah, it's going to fall, that radio is going to fall apart. A couple of companies went on an aggressive long-term campaign, spending a lot more money at wholesale, which harmed their gross margin because they weren't raising their prices. They still wanted to bring their customers in. And now, those companies have a reputation for very high-quality electronics. I'm specifically referring to the electronics market. And lo and behold, they can charge higher prices now. But so it's not always horrible. By the way, do you know any companies that I would be specifically referring to in electronics that used to have long, long ago was Sony, bingo, Sony, Aiwa is another one. Definitely. Those are companies that used to have cheap, and then their wholesale prices, you start seeing their financials, their wholesale prices are going up. They were starting to buy better stuff, but they weren't charging higher prices, so their gross margins began to slide. Know the formulas and think about what it would be that would cause something. You don't have to go into a deep analysis. You can go to that first part of the analysis, but make sure that you can show me that you don't just see a ratio. You look at something very important, for example, is what a single ratio really doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot, unless it's times interest earned below zero, below one. That means a lot. A lot of times, the most important thing is not a single number, but a trend in something. So, for example, you're my son. One night, you start channeling Cthulhu. Well, you know, that's okay. You know, that happens. Teenage years, hormones, and all of that. But if over a period of the next 5 years I start going into your room and there are these demonic sigils and there's evidence of human sacrifice, then I begin to start thinking about, well, maybe we ought to, you know, talk to a counselor or something like that, except that when we did, you jumped over the table and ate his soul. That was very expensive for me as far as liability goes. But anyway, okay. Make sure you understand the Federal Reserve. First of all, the Federal Reserve in terms of something as simple as, starting at the base, what is money? What are the three kinds of money? Now, that is not, if I ask about the three kinds of money, that's not a question about M0, M1, M2, M3, L, and all of that. That's a question about the fundamental thing that is money, which is important for you because the concept of money is already changing. What we consider money now would have been laughed out the door when I was very young. Using money on a plastic card, really having your paycheck, you never see your money anymore from your paycheck. That would never have flown back in my time. But now, so it's important for you to know what money is, what the three kinds of money are, and then from there, then we can move on to talk about the Federal Reserve. If I want you to talk about M1, M2, M3, all that, I will ask you about monetary aggregates. Monetary aggregates. And I could very well ask you to tell me what was happening to the monetary aggregates that caused the in the years prior to the collapse in September of 2008. I could very well ask you that. I'll put the chart back up one more time. Now remember, you're doing a lot better answering questions this time than you did on the first exam. Stay frosty. Just answer the question. Don't go into all kinds of weird stuff and all that. Just answer your question. Also, of course, I might ask you, what are the Federal Reserve's jobs? What are its duties? There are three duties. Those are separate from a question where I could ask you, what are the three tools of monetary policy? Conducting monetary policy is one of the Fed's duties. But what are the three tools that it can use? That's a separate question. I don't think I'm going to go into asking you about open market operations. That's more econ. They didn't do a very good job doing that, so there you go. I did my best, but I wouldn't waste your time on a final exam in finance with that question. Moving on from there, though, interest rates. Make sure you have an understanding. What are the components of an interest rate? In other words, there is a risk-free rate, and then there is a risk premium. Can you tell me what the risk premium is? What are its pieces? What do each of the pieces mean? What's the risk-free rate? What are its pieces? What do those mean? So make sure that you understand interest rate on a level that is different from the average hoe handle out there in the world. They'll say interest rate. They won't understand that that is a complex little animal that has all kinds of nuances, which is why we have all kinds of interest rates, because based upon economics, economic policy, you know, the risk-free rate has those two pieces in it, but it's also based upon the type of security we're talking about. Is it a high-risk security? What are the pieces of the risk? Now, the last thing, and then I'll open it up for you to ask some questions, and then I have those student evaluations for you to do. Here's the first, make sure, and this is going back to corporate finance, know the component costs of capital. What are they? Know the component costs of capital. Make sure you can break them down more in more detail than just, well, there's debt and there's equity. Well, there are different kinds of equity. Actually, there are different kinds of debt. And I've shown you those. You don't need to go into that much detail on the debt side. But the equity side has all kinds of nuances. There's internal versus external, preferred versus common. Make sure you can demonstrate that you understand that. In that same regard, make sure you know what is meant by capital structure. And make sure you know why companies care about capital structure. Why do companies keep an eye on their capital structure? And in fact, in some cases, they will simply borrow money and buy stock back into the treasury. Or they will sell stock to pay off pay off callable bonds. Why are they doing it? Why do they pay attention? Why is a capital project, when you say, I want $1 million, you're the project manager, they don't just take a wad of $1 million and give it to you. They take some out of one pool and some out of another pool to give you the money for your project. Why are they doing that? What is the point? It sounds like a long, complicated answer. It's actually a very short answer. You do know, right? Okay. I want to make sure you... Okay. You're shaking your head. Okay. Now, I do apologize for doing this, but you deserve it. Okay. Now, there are different things. I could wrap you up the side of the head. I could pop you up the side of the head. Or I could, starts with a W.
Whack?
Yes! You got it, whack. Little light bulbs shining, points of light coming on, LEDs. Real finance for real people. That's what I sell you here. Now, your question's for me. What do you have to ask me? Yes. Okay, the depth of a question's answer is going to, I'll be very clear on how far I want you to go. Now, always make sure that you know that an answer should not go more than two sentences, and those four or five lines, I think I give you five lines. If you're going past five lines, you've gone too far with an answer. In some cases, there's not more to say. The greater the systematic risk, the greater the expected return. There's no more to say about that. Internal versus external equity. There's more to say. What are you talking about there? You're giving two words, so you have to tell me something about those two words. Okay? Always think about it this way. If you're just giving me a word, you're probably going to have to tell me something about what that word means. Okay? I'm trying to shape you because I just got bitched at again this week at a dinner about, these people can't write coming out of here. No one teaches them how to write. Well, I do, bitch. You know, and I said it just like that. I was irritated because he was lumping me with PowerPoint professors and all that crap. So, you know, anyway, he wasn't paying for the meal anyway, so he can kiss my ass. You had a question up here. What did she say?
I couldn't hear.
Oh, you couldn't hear? Well, let me give you a demonstration up here. woman, I can hit you up the side of the head. Would you, that your hair, is that like normal to oily? Yeah. Oh, sorry. I can pop you up the side of the head, or if I really want to, I can, not smack, whack. There, whack. Other questions for you? Now, yes. There's a question like, you know, that could relate to, he's asked about flotation costs. Cost of capital, the components of capital and the costs, it probably would be worth your while just say there's a cost of internally generated equity, but then there's that cost of new equity, which is higher. If you wanted to say because of flotation costs, well, that's going a little too far for what I would expect, but I would expect you to know that new equity is more expensive than internally generated equity. And it wouldn't take you long just thinking about it because you lose some of the company loses some of its money when it has someone else sell new stock for it. But I would probably not be excited for it. I would probably not take off points if you didn't say it's because of the flotation cost. I'm looking for answers that show a good understanding, but I don't expect all of you to be comprehensive geniuses in this subject. The performance on the final exam with a high, you did very well on the second exam. You'll slide a little bit. It won't be terrible, and that's just because you're going to be much broader. This is the whole course you're going to be facing. But at the same time, you should still be strong going into this. Just study your asses off. And that is all I have for you today and forever. I thank you. Elvis has left the building.